Thank you so much, Ambassador, and thank you to Finland for the invitation. I'm very appreciative of the opportunity to come back to Geneva and speak at the CD. It's good to see so many familiar faces. Certainly, we've seen the topic of nuclear risk reduction evolve quite a bit over these last few years, and I'm very happy to reflect on the topic. My comments are divided into three parts. One is what we mean by risk reduction and its relation to nuclear disarmament. Two is what the spectrum of risk reduction activity encompasses. And three is how to move ahead in a challenging environment. And of course, I should say I'm speaking here in a personal capacity. So what do we mean by risk and risk reduction? So nuclear risk is a function of probability and consequence. And in this particular case, we're talking about a nuclear weapon detonation event by any means, intentional or inadvertent. Risk reduction is about reducing the probability of use. The risk of nuclear weapon use exists as long as nuclear weapons do. So the ultimate form of risk reduction is to get rid of them altogether. Risk reduction is not a substitute nor prerequisite for nuclear disarmament. However, in an environment where tensions are quite high and arms control and disarmament progress is lacking, risk reduction can have a value on its own merits and also help disarmament by, one, facilitating practical cooperation and engagement among nuclear armed adversaries, two, providing concrete movement and strengthening the overall culture of accountability in the nuclear space, and three, to directly refocus attention on existing obligations and commitments. In this context, risk reduction came up as a key issue at the last NPT review conference. And while there was no consensus final document, there were quite constructive discussions about the topic, thanks in part to the working papers from groups like the Stockholm Initiative and the NPDI, among others, as well as the work of the P5, including through its January 2022 statement prior. It also links back, of course, to point 5 of the action plan in the 2010 NPT review conference outcome. Of course, key to these kinds of commitments and agreements is implementation, and there remains a need for tangible outcomes in risk reduction, also including outside the NPT context and among all nuclear armed states. So turning to the spectrum of risk reduction measures, there's really a plethora of approaches, ideas, proposals, and activities for what states can or should be doing to reduce risk. And notably, risk reduction as a concept is not new. Its origins stem from steps taken during the Cold War between the US and Soviet Union and later Russia, as well as confidence-building measures between India and Pakistan, many of which in both cases still continue to this day. But there's value in stepping back now to look more systematically at the nature of risk in this context for a number of reasons. Risk is dynamic, ever-changing, linked to contextual aspects, and further is being impacted by technological developments with their full effects to be determined. And effective risk reduction will be comprised of baskets of varying and mutually reinforcing elements. In terms of what these varying measures could entail, we can draw from things that are already in existence or being done at some level. And of course, there have been a lot of ideas compiled from my past work at UNIDIR, currently at CIPRI, as well as other institutes and in the aforementioned working papers. And they include everything from commitments to risk reduction, expanded dialogue or dedicated multilateral processes, transparency around stockpiles, negative security assurances, no first use policies, reducing the operational status of systems, nuclear weapon systems, notification and data exchange agreements, reducing the role of nuclear weapons in security policies, the pursuit of conflict prevention and resolution processes, military to military contacts, crisis communications, and so forth. There's really a long list. To try to kind of group some of these together, I would kind of characterize them accordingly. One is political recognition about the nature of nuclear risk and accompanying commitment to take measures to address them. Two is changes in strategies or doctrines that limit situations in which nuclear weapons are considered for use or to lessen their importance. Three are frameworks and means to restrict capabilities of particular concern or their deployment. four are operational measures that can facilitate greater transparency around or promote restraint in related behaviors and activities. And these can outline procedures for notification, means of signaling, or facilitate further inquiry to basically head off conventional confrontations that could otherwise escalate. And five would be processes that engage broader strategic concerns. For states, if not to come to mutual understanding about all aspects, to at least recognize their perspectives, priorities, and concerns. And these categories are non-exhaustive and not mutually exclusive, and all of these different types can and do exist simultaneously and work in tandem, as seen in the past. So moving ahead on nuclear risk reduction, I think a common thread in a lot of existing state initiatives is to encourage high-level political commitment to kickstart dialogue processes, to explore means of stability and predictability, and also strengthen confidence and security building measures on the ground. All of this makes sense. I think it's a good formula. So just kind of a couple of extra points of emphasis from me here. One is the need to have dedicated spaces to discuss the topic, to not only ensure political attention and elevate efforts in the field, but this can also help in the development of common understandings and priorities of risk reduction concepts. This can also create greater capacity and expertise in risk reduction, which is necessary to develop bespoke measures linked to regional security dynamics. I should flag that Australia and the Philippines are co-chairing a discussion at the ASEAN Regional Forum this week on the topic, following up a workshop from 2019. And I think these regional approaches are enormously useful for these purposes. Second point is to the need to connect conversations at multiple levels. Specifically on risk reduction, I know members of the NPDI, Stockholm Initiative, and the P5 have engaged on the topic in the recent past. I know that there's also a lot of crossover participation in the creating an environment for nuclear disarmament as well. I also would add that I think the nuclear community can engage discussions outside the nuclear space that can impact on potential use. The same way that conventional dangerous military activities and incidences at sea agreements are incredibly relevant from the point of view of nuclear escalation, there are ongoing conversations about confidence and transparency in outer space or in the cyber domain or in artificial intelligence that can contribute to preventing escalation as well. And here I'd point to the recent U.S. political declaration on responsible military use of artificial intelligence and autonomy that talks about the keeping a human in the loop as far as decisions concerning nuclear weapons employment. And so this is an important basis of conversation. And these can also be models for contemporary risk reduction in terms of updating existing agreements and adjusting them to new capabilities and so forth. My final point is just that effective risk reduction will require greater scale and pace of some of these existing activities as well as new ones. That risk reduction needs to be more multifaceted, multi-domain, and multilateral to reflect the more diverse set of risk drivers out there. And at the same time, the need for multilateral activity should not obscure the fact that risk reduction will have to take place nationally, bilaterally, and mini or plurilaterally as well. And with that, thanks for listening.